Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to The Analyst Inside Cricket, and we're still in India. I'm Simon Hughes, and in this edition, we've got an exclusive interview with Ravichandran Ashwin, the world's number one test bowler. He tells us how a recording device has helped him get to that status.
And I'm Simon Mann. We'll also hear from Ravi Shastri on how all the cash in Indian cricket is helping to find new talent around this vast country. And England's emerging white ball star, Sam Billings, reveals the nicknames of the England team.
Of course, what we'll also do is review that brilliant one-day series and ask, are England good enough to win the Champions Trophy?
And don't forget, you can press the subscribe button so you automatically receive our weekly editions. And please leave a review of this podcast on iTunes. So, the series in India, the one-day series, finishes India 2, England 1. England winning a dramatic last game at Eden Gardens in Calcutta by 5 runs. Redemption of sorts for Stokes. And then Wokes as well, bowling that last over. I mean, just that feeling that it was going to be the same situation all over again, with the ball disappearing around the park and India winning, as West Indies did when Stokes bowled that final over in the World 2020. What a game of cricket, though, Simon. It was a fabulous game.
It was a fabulous game, and England deserved to win it. They had the worst of the conditions. They had to deal with a lot of movement early on when the light was good, but there was plenty of green in the pitch. And then, of course, they had to bowl with the dew and the damp underfoot. I think the bowlers were slipping as they were running in. And they held their nerve really well. I think, you know, credit to the batsmen for getting 320 in quite tricky conditions, the sort of conditions actually that Virat Kohli and others said you get quite often in England. And then to bowl, I don't think they got all their bowling right. I think they exploited the movement in the pitch well, but there were times when they just got their tactics a bit wrong. But in a way, that's what these one-day series are about, building towards a big tournament so they can identify the kind of bowlers they need in those last 10 overs and where to bowl. It was a funny one today, because normally you'd think at the death you bowl Yorkers because they're the sort of percentage best option. But actually, when there's something in the pitch, as there was today, especially for the seamers, you're better off, I think, bowling more normally, just bowling normal lengths, normal lines, and batsmen are forced into trying to hit over the top, and with the movement and slightly uneven bounce there was in this pitch, they mishit it. So, you know, England finally, almost by default, got their tactics right just at the last moment, and I'm so pleased they won, because, you know, their one-day bandwagon has been rolling on in England and they're almost invincible. But when they come overseas, sometimes they look a little bit more vulnerable. So to have beaten that fantastic Indian team is impressive.
Now, you've bowled the final over in a big Lord's final. What's it like for someone like Chris Wokes, 16 to win in the match, you know, crowds baying for an Indian victory? What's it like? What's that experience like?
It's terrifying, really, because you know that one stupid ball, an accidental full toss, a ball down the leg side, a wide, can give the other team victory. It's all on those last six balls. It's all or nothing. You know, no one's going to remember if you lose the game. No one's going to say, well, you know, it was sort of somebody who misfielded in the 40th over or somebody bowled a long hop in the 42nd over. If you lose that game with 16 to win or 14 to win off that last over, it's your fault. And lots of people come up to you and say, don't worry, it's not your fault. But you do. You take the responsibility. And obviously, there's a fair amount of guesswork involved in what the batsman's going to try and do and, you know, where do you set the fielders? It's so difficult in the modern game because batsmen are so brilliant at their versatility. They can hit the ball almost anywhere, 360 degrees. So where do you put those five boundary fielders? And also, in a way, if you put those boundary fielders in particular places, that's telegraphing probably where you're going to bowl, like England did. They put the long off on the long on out, put deep cover and deep square leg out, fine leg and third man in the ring. That tells the batsman he's going to bowl full and probably wide, so you can set yourself for that. So you've got to be, I think you've got to be quite brave, actually. You've got to try and forget, overlook the fact that it's all down to you and just, you know, kind of immerse yourself in trying to outwit that batsman for those six balls, maybe try and mix it up a bit. I mean, I made the mistake in the NatWest final of 1989, obviously nothing like as intense an atmosphere, but still, you know, probably 8 million watching on telly in the 1980s. And I bowled a slower ball, second ball to Neil Smith. Many Middlesex fans will not forgive me for it because he whacked it for six. But I'd been deceiving him with the slower ball in previous overs. So I thought that was my banker and it failed. And you feel a complete fool. And actually, my whole career has been sort of identified with that moment. So, you know, they are career-defining moments. And you've somehow got to hold your nerve, which Chris Wokes did.
Yeah, and Ben Stokes as well in the 48th over. I mean, he doesn't have, you know, great memories of playing at Eden Gardens, also being hit for four sixes by Carlos Brathwaite. But sort of redemption of sorts for him. He made runs and he bowled brilliant in that 48th over. He took three wickets. And also, as well, you play well in that sort of theatre, you put yourself in the frame for a decent IPL contract as well, if he's allowed to play significant amounts of IPL cricket.
I mean, he's really come forward as a one-day player. I felt last year that Ben Stokes hadn't really got it right as a one-day cricketer. He had a best score of about 70. His bowling was a bit hit and miss. But now he's coming in at number six and he's smacking it really hard and hitting it into the gaps and really giving that sort of that icing on the cake of the last five overs. He's really getting England the momentum to get really big scores and very dangerous batsman. His bowling is courageous and he deserved the man of the match today for three wickets that he took. He went for a lot of runs, but he got Kohli out vitally and he also got a couple of wickets towards the end where batsmen were taking him on. He backed himself. England, you know, actually sort of stuck to a more traditional English style of bowling, and I think that probably help them in the end, and that's the kind of surfaces they're going to be playing on the Champions Trophy in June in England. So that bodes well for them, I think.
Looking at the series as a whole, it's the first time I've come to India and I've seen all the one-day cricket in India since the start of the century. Every single match that England have played against India in one-day cricket, the first time they've really, I think, threatened, challenged India consistently in a series. Okay, they won the odd game here and there. It was actually 3-2 last time. They won the first game and the last game. There's been 5-0s and 5-1s. They drew in 2002. It was the first time that you really felt that India were being extended in this series, which shows, I think, you know, that England are an improving team, and, you know, in their own conditions. I mean, they've been focusing on the Champions Trophy, haven't they, in the World Cup. They've been really looking at those two tournaments as tournaments they can win, really give the game a huge boost in England, in the UK. And the bowling still looks a bit vulnerable, but they look like a side who are going to excite. They look like a side who could do really well. But it's all going to come down to those pressure situations, isn't it? Like as we saw in the game, the final match.
And so the massive movement that they've made in this series, advance-wise, is working out who are going to bowl at the end of the innings. Chris Wokes, I think, they've identified as one. He's not always going to get it right. You don't. Desmond Haynes, in fact, the former West Indies player, is still reminding me every time I see him that I owe him about 10 grand, which he'd bought a spoiler and some kind of other attachments to his car in Barbados, backing me to win that 1989 NatWest final, and we lost. So he says I owe him about 10 grand for the various bits of his car that he had to pay for himself.
It's tough on Bolton.
It's tough on Bolton.
It is.
But you know, Chris Woakes held his nerve there. Stokes is obviously good at the end. I mean, I think that the one ingredient that England need to make their bowling look better is Mark Wood. If they could find a way of getting him fit and keeping him fit for that Champions Trophy, I think he could be the difference. I think he could just get key wickets. And I mean, India have played out of their skin in this series to win those two matches. I mean, their batting has been brilliant. I don't put any blame on England's bowlers, really. They've tried their absolute best. They haven't got much variety. That's a bit of a problem. But I think in English conditions, they'll be a force. The batting is now so sound. There's always going to be someone who allows the team to kick on and get 350, 360, which is a great position of strength to be in.
What about the influence of spin over this winter? I mean, it's coming towards an end as far as England's matches in India. Jadeja has been good in the one-day series. Ashwin, not quite so effective in one-day cricket, but in the Test series, he's a top-class bowler, especially in Indian conditions.
I've said to Ravi Ashwin, actually, well, you don't like him being called Ravi, do you? We've got to call him Ravi Chandran,
yeah.
Ashwin. I had a very long conversation with him the other day. He very kindly allowed me to sort of interview him about cricket, and he described himself, you know, as a cricket obsessive, and it's that obsession that's clearly made him into the bowler that he is. Not quite as effective in one-day cricket, perhaps. It's a difficult job being a spinner in one-day cricket, but in Test cricket, he is deservedly the number one bowler in the world. 120-odd wickets in the last 2 years, you know, loads of fivers, match-winning, series-winning performances. It's attention to detail, and interestingly, the use of a voice recorder that's really got him to that number one title.
I have a couple of wrist loading positions at the last. I try and load it at 180 sometimes, try and load it at 90 sometimes, and try and see how much of difference I can make at the crease. And it does make a lot of difference, because if I load in a certain way, I deliver from a different point in the crease. And if I load in another way, I come closer to the stumps, and even the amount of, or the margin of drift varies with respect to how I load the ball. So those are the subtleties I bank on. I mean, these are like, it might seem like subtleties, but these are huge changes, because not many people will be able to load their wrist in different fashions when they're going through a spell. It is probably most of the spinners just load their wrist in one position all their life. So
when you talk about load, you mean sort of this position here, where you're braced,
and
the
braced.
Ball is close to you.
Yeah, probably the position where I'm rocking back and then moving forward. And sometimes I even play around with my rock backs. Sometimes I go through quicker than the crease to try and create some sort of a mirage to the batsman. Sometimes I load and slow my action down at the crease, depending on what I want to do in that particular spell. It is very interesting what I've been able to manage over the last year or so. I've done a whole lot of crazy things, to be very honest. I don't think I ever imagined that I'd be able to do so much. And that is exactly why I use a voice recorder, to try and record things about what I'm doing and how much I can draw from those experiences going into the future. I try and do it as a laboratory practice, and sometimes I execute it immediately in the match and try and record it, saying, this is what I did, and this was the result, and this is what can happen if I did it in this fashion. So what else can I do? How else can I change my wrist position to get it into different positions? So these are the sort of things I do with a voice recorder, and sometimes I do it with loading. Sometimes the craziest thing I've realized about bowling spin is how much of a difference your run-up can make. If you can increase your speed of your run-up by 5%, what is the result on the other side? If you can reduce it by 5%, what is the result on the other side? So these are some crazy things I've realized over these years that I've been a spinner for, and I would say I've been very lucky to actually have a strong understanding brain of all these things.
So you sound like you're almost a bowling scientist. Do you look at video as well?
I look at heaps of videos. I've just reduced it over the last year or so because I've been more interested about what I'm doing at the crease and what I'm doing at the run-up that I've actually forgotten about what's happening at the other side. But I have watched so much of videos in my life. I watch so much cricket. I woke up this morning watching the Women's Big Bash League in Australia. So I do a bit of... I started coaching a lot of kids in 2010. And that's when 2009 probably, that's when I actually started becoming a cricketer of sorts. And I think coaching those people actually helped me understand batting better, helped me understand cricket better. I was so crazy that even in 2011, once we finished the World Cup and we won the World Cup, in 3 days' time, I was back in Chennai. I have a couple of club teams that I own now. So I bought them for about a crore of rupees each, because I just have the interest of doing that. And I go to those games, try and take a diary down and see where these people are struggling and how I can make a difference to their cricket and all that. I'm sort of a, you can say I'm sort of a cricket tragic rather than a
or a geek. cricket tragic. That's very good.
You also sometimes get the feeling with players that, you know, when they stop playing, they're sort of glad the game's behind them. You know, oh, I'm never going to pick up a bat again. You say to some former players, oh, I'm never going to pick up a bat again. They say, I've done with the game. I mean, Geoffrey Boycott, I don't think he ever picked up a bat and played after he retired. And I think supporters, spectators, they always feel like, you know, if you're in cricket, immersed in cricket, you'll sort of always love it and always want to be playing it, you know, in benefit games or charity games. But it's not necessarily the way. It's great to hear someone so enthusiastic about the game. I mean, he was such a handful in the Test series against England. I mean, Cook had done well against him, for example. Alistair Cook had done well against him in the past, but he's really struggled against him. It's that subtlety that he has. It's funny, just sort of sensing how people feel about him outside the cricket bubble, if you like, you know, on social media, that sort of thing. People say, oh, you know, one person said to me, oh, he's just a bits and pieces cricketer. And he, of course, he didn't have a great record in England as well. And, you know, people judge that, don't they? They say, well, you know, he can't do it outside of India. And, you know, his record in India is very good. But, I mean, look at it. It's a phenomenal record.
He hasn't done very well elsewhere. I think he's got something like 207 of his 248 test wickets in India. It's incredible, really. He's got 3 in England in one test and about 15 or something in Australia. And he's really looking forward to the South Africa series that India are playing in a couple of months' time, because that, I think, will test him again against a different team. I think that you can't underestimate the influence of Anil Kumble on Ravi Ashwin, who was an unorthodox bowler, really, Anil Kumble, but kept it very simple. He just bowled, you know, one ball, and he allowed human variation, natural variation, to make each ball behave differently. And over his career, Shane Warne did the same. You know, as time went on, Warne bowled less and less googlies and flippers and, you know, all sorts of other deliveries, and he just stuck with his leg break and a sort of straight-on slider. And I think we've seen Ravi Ashwin do the same. He started his career probably partly in one-day cricket, bowling carom balls and, you know, leg breaks and things. And actually, he's gone back now to bowling pretty much just lots of off-breaks with the odd straight-on delivery. Very subtle little changes, keeping the batsman under control. And I said to him, actually, that, you know, he's the most interesting spinner I've seen since Warne retired, because you can just see the way he's manipulating a batsman all the time. Not quite so effective in one-day cricket.
Why do you think he's not been effective abroad? Is it just simply the pitches?
I think he's a better bowler now. In fact, interestingly, he was saying he liked to play county cricket in the future, and he thinks that India are going to relax the rules about Indian players coming over to England. I think he's maturing as a bowler, and he probably will be a bit more effective now in England. He's got the added advantage of them now using the DRS in Indian tests. So I think he'll be, you know, probably go from strength to strength, actually.
Yeah, well, he's, you know, one of their best players. He's the number one ranked bowler in the world, and he's also, his batting this winter has been superb as well. He's, you know, fantastic all round.
He started as a batsman, actually. Yeah. He started as an opening batsman, he was telling me. And he never got any nets. I mean, this is an extraordinary story, that he never got practice in the nets playing for India until Duncan Fletcher took over as coach, and who really recommended that lower order players practice as hard as the top order players. And now he's got 4 test hundreds.
There's an immense amount of talent in Indian cricket, isn't there? We saw it in the Test series. Someone like, you know, Karan Nair came in and did tremendous. Or even, you know, Yadav in the One Day series. There's a young wicketkeeper batsman called Pant, 19 years of age, and, you know, he's highly spoken of as well. And one thing I think we've sensed, and we've noticed actually, we've seen it as well, the building of new stadiums around India. Last one they tour, you know, went to Ranchi, for example, which is MS Dhoni's hometown. It's a spanking new stadium. There are all sorts of other new stadiums as well. The one at Pune, England played the first one-day game there. Nagpur's got a new stadium. I mean, they're going out and about as well. You know, matches played in Dharamshala, for example. Totally, they're spreading the word.
Which is really what they needed to do probably, 10 years ago. It's been the IPL that's been the catalyst for that, making out, doing up grounds around the country, far-flung places like, as you say, Dharamshala. Bad news for the rest of the world because they've got 1.2 billion people to choose from.
Churning out all these magnificent players. There's a lot of cash as well. There's a lot of money in Indian cricket. I know you've been speaking to Ravi Shastri about the influence of the money in the game and the desire to take the game out to far-flung parts of India, not just the traditional centres. And he's been saying how important that's been and will be to the development of Indian cricket.
If you look at all the others, the big grounds, they've improved on their facilities, but new grounds, it's amazing. That's why you see the standard of fielding. People say standard of fielding of India is improved. It's improved because of the facilities that the boys get. They can dive, throw themselves. I mean, try diving in the 80s. You won't be playing for a month and a half after that. So it's you feel proud. You also feel, great as a cricketer that when you played, cricket was basically centered around the metros, Mumbai, Chennai, Delhi, Bangalore, Kanpur. But now with the stadiums coming up everywhere, like the places I mentioned, you're getting cricketers from there. You're getting a Jadeja and a Pujara from Rajkot, a Dhoni from Ranchi. You'll get a Parthiv Patel from Ahmedabad. As I said, you're getting people from all around the country.
And in fact, Gujarat have just won the Ranji Trophy.
Yeah, and you're getting people from all over. So it's fabulous. Earlier, a guy like Dhoni would have had to go to Jamshedpur or go to Calcutta, to be noticed. Here now, at his doorstep, he's got a beautiful stadium. And Jharkhand reached the semi-final of the Ranji Trophy, which clearly shows that Rajkot reached the quarterfinals, Jharkhand the semi-finals, which is clearly showing that where there are facilities, the players are coming out of there. And world-class facilities. The last game was in Pune. A fabulous ground. Great atmosphere, full houses. And if you go to a place like Rajkot, I've never seen practice facilities anywhere in the world. I went now, I was with the team for 18 months as a director of the team. So I went to most of the venues around the world. But I was shocked when I went to Rajkot. You have 12 practice pitches. I mean, earlier used to take slots as to Indian team will come at 9 to 12, Australian team will come in the afternoon. Here both teams can come together. And anyone who comes now, they say India is one of the best places to tour. Right from hotels to airports to cricket grounds. Fabulous.
I would 100% agree.
And it's easy to move around. Connectivity is so much better than what it used to be. You hardly get on a bus journey for 2 hours or 3 hours. And there's still plenty of talent to be tapped. We don't have a center of excellence. What's happening in India is that you have tremendous talent between, say, 16 and 19 years of age. And then they disappear. Whereas if you have all these facilities, I would say at least 70% of that talent will be protected. And they'll knock on the door of the Indian team.
The IPL, you're the kind of impresario, the ringmaster in a way. Mm. What is that thing you say at the beginning of each game when you're trying to get the crowd up? What do you say?
No, I say it in their local language. So, because we are a vast, vast country, and we've got about 17, 18 different dialects, languages. So wherever I go, if it is in Bangalore, I'll pick Kannada as the language there. So I'll catch somebody and say, let's go Bangalore. How do you say it in Kannada? So I'll get a line that'll get the crowd going and then come back to English. So if it's in Jaipur, I'll do it in the Rajasthan language, local language.
Give me an example.
Like in Punjab, when you go, if you're doing it in Mohali, chak de fatte, Punjab, let's rock and roll, Punjab, that kind of stuff. And they're ready. That gets it going. They hear it on this thing. So they're ready for the toss.
What do you say in Mumbai?
Mumbai, Chala Mumbai, party karibuya. Come on Mumbai, get ready to party or rock. So things like that. And then you don't know half the languages. So when you go to Chennai, That's an old one, but you say whistle podu, Chennai, and they love it. You know, whistle podu means all start whistling and it's party time. In Bengal, you go, you know, Kevanacho, Calcutta. I mean, it means, you know, how are you, Calcutta? Wake up, you know, kind of that kind of stuff.
I suppose, in a way, what you're doing is you're drawing in
yeah.
all the nation,
yeah.
all the dialects, all the different regions.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're playing your part
yeah.
in unifying the country to get
Absolutely.
As many cricketers and as much interest as possible.
Absolutely, and getting the crowd going. You know, getting more bums on seats at the ground. You know, 1.5 months, you make a kind of package that you would, you know, dream of. For that 1 week, you can compare your wages to footballers' wages. Say, okay, forget the 12 months, but this week I made as much as say, a Rooney or a,
yeah.
you know, or anyone
yeah.
there, you
yeah.
know, or a Ronaldo, anything.
Yeah.
Because some of the guys, they do it, you know, when you see those numbers. And then earlier people would say, "Are you're spoiling them, you know. This is, I should not be giving them that much, or this board should not be giving them." This is market forces. It is the people who are paying are the franchisees. So it's like, you know, it's an open bid in an auction. Like, I'd like to see what Ben Stokes goes for this year's auction when he comes in. I mean, he might get the shock of his life when the eventual number is mentioned.
Ravi Shastri, who's the former all-rounder, of course, who played in Indian test side in the 1980s, very good spin bowler as well as opening the batting.
There's a bit of Tony Gregg about him in a way, isn't it? That sort of selling the game, broadcasting,
yeah.
but also selling the game as well.
And he's been a coach. And, you know, he's one of those people who's done virtually everything. And you know the bidding for the next IPL, which is sort of going on right now. This is the 10th year of the IPL coming up. The bidding between broadcasters is going to be very interesting. Sony have it at the moment, but Star want it. Sony bought 10 years of the IPL for $1 billion, right? Now they're talking about the rights going for $3.5 billion. It's crazy money, but that's probably what's going to happen.
Mm.
So even more money comes into the game and into the players' pockets.
Well, England have got their own players emerging
yeah.
as well, haven't
True.
They? We mentioned Sam Billings, for example, who I know you've also been speaking to and played in the final game and... Well, made a decent fist to it.
He acquitted himself
yeah.
well, didn't he?
Mm.
I mean,
yeah.
he, you know, he had to open the batting, which is not his natural game. And the pitch was moving around a bit. He played some good shots. He would have learnt a lot from it. I think that his fielding was the thing. I mean, took two key catches, nerveless under pressure, that marks him out as someone that's going to have a big international future. What do you think?
Well, the catch he took in the final over, Jadhav playing that lofty off drive, and it went out towards the boundary. The crowd was roaring. They thought it was another big hit,
mm.
and he came in, just took it as if he was plucking an apple off the tree. There was no sort of excessive celebration either. It was just, well, what did you expect?
Yeah.
I backed myself to catch it. Whether it was, oh goodness me, I'm glad I caught it. I didn't feel like that. It felt like, you know, he was cool, just walked in, and then the team rushed out to congratulate him as well. It was almost as if, well, you know, that's what I do. And that, I mean, he was also brilliant in the field, scurrying around here, there and everywhere.
England's players, squad, they're such a lovely bunch. You know, and Billings epitomises that. He's very decent, he's very polite, he's very enthusiastic. He will always talk to anyone who wants to chat about the game. They're incredibly approachable. To a man, you know, Chris Wokes is often known as the nicest man in cricket.
Yeah.
I just love their whole spirit, the way they play the game, their attitude, the fun they obviously have, and that is reflected in the matiness of them. And you know, I said to Sam, "What about your nicknames? You know, have you got some silly nicknames for each other?" And he said they did.
For me, Jazza. I mean, it's pretty dull, but the lads think I'm quite posh, so. Yeah, that's simply why I get called Jazza. Also, Bilbo, I used to be tiny as a kid, so Bilbo Baggins, the Hobbit. So, Joe Root and I growing up were the smallest by a mile. So, taller than most of the lads now, and so is he. So, but that's just stuck, really.
And I like the Jason Roy one.
They won't be too happy if I say that, but he's got a rather big head, so Melonhead, we call him, so... he's not too happy with that, but a bit of a laugh anyway.
Well, that's Sam Billings. Well, what are your favourite nicknames in cricket then?
Ben Stokes' nickname is Baked Bean. Or sometimes, after orangutan, Ranga they call him. We in the Cricketer magazine have done our 11 this month, and each month there's an 11 of sort of some topic, and this month it's 11 favourite nicknames. I think the two that I like the most, they're quite silly, really, but one is the South African bowler called Monde Zondeki, whose nickname is All Hands. The other one, nobody will know this, but there was a guy that played for Nottinghamshire called Greg Mike, who was an average cricketer, mainly a bowler who batted at eight. And he went through a spell of batting at eight for Notts and getting naught and one, so he called him Binary Mike. And it stuck.
Are all Hugheses called Yozza?
Yeah, they are. And that started with David...
Boys in the Black stuff, wasn't it?
It was Boys in the Black stuff, but in fact, even before that, David Hughes of Lancashire was known as Yozza. And he preceded me by some, you know, decade or so. And I think Hughes, the nickname for Hughes in the Northwest is Yozza. Every Hughes is called Yozza.
Right.
So when I came on the scene, David Hughes already being quite a prominent player, Mike Gatting just said, well, Yozza number two, you know. So I got called Yozza. Actually, I tell you what my favourite one is you know, most nicknames are terrible. They're sort of just ending a Y. Wokesy, yeah. Stokesy and all that. My favourite, I think, is a player from Middlesex who went to Hampshire called Kevin James, who does quite a bit of radio now.
Yeah.
And he was known as Spikes because he was so far up the coach's arse, that's all you could see. And it probably applies to quite a few players around.
Well, you'll congratulate you just for reeling that to the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's in a lot of hard yakker, actually. And I've referred to him as Spikes virtually all the time. Poor guy. Not fair, is it?
The one nickname that, you know, is obvious, and I don't even think people realise it's the case. Actually, I mean, Jack Russell, you know, everyone just calls him Jack, and he refers to himself as Jack, but, you know, his name is not Jack, is it? It's Robert. But everyone, I think, assumes that his first name is Jack, even though it's not. Should we end up by doing our high point, low point? I know what your low point is of the end of your tour of India.
Let's go with the low point first, yes. I made the mistake of visiting the Hooghly River this morning, very early, 6 o'clock, got up to watch the sunrise over the beautiful city and the amazingly serene Hooghly River with all these people carrying half their body weight or twice their body weight across the bridge. And I just was tempted. I was really thirsty and I was tempted in some sugar cane. There was a little man grinding what looked like a mangle, putting these branches of sugarcane through and producing juice, and I supped a big glass of it for probably about 3 rupees, cost about 2p, and I've been regretting it ever since. It didn't stay down for long.
Yeah, well, I've seen the effects of it. I mean, I have to say, when you started telling the story, my instinctive reaction was schoolboy error, but there we go.
I should have known by now, shouldn't I, really? I mean, I've been coming to India for 30 years. Yeah. I came to Calcutta in 1980, so should really know by now.
Well, I first came to Calcutta in 1996, and this is going to be my high point, is an England victory at last in Calcutta. They played the World Cup final here in 1987. They played in 2002 here when, I mean, they were sawn off. The umpire gave me out, Marcus Jascothi, was winning the game for England, played brilliantly, made 100, and ball was pitching, you know, like 2 foot outside leg stump. The last time they were here, they were another winning position. They had India 200 for six, and they got 270. Dhoni thrashed it, and they were 129 for no wicket in reply, and they lost their last, well, all 10 wickets for about 45. So England winning in Calcutta. I've seen it happen.
Yeah,
I've seen England win.
You were there
in Calcutta. I was there. That's my high point to end this week.
They've exorcised the ghost of Eden Gardens. It's great.
Yeah, but I wasn't here for the World 2020 final. I watched that on television. But that was another defeat. At last, England have won in Calcutta.
This three-match one-day series is, you know, it's shown how one-day cricket has evolved so fast. It's a compelling game, isn't it? I mean, you know, everyone said, oh, you know, what's 50-over cricket got to offer? It's going to die. But, I mean, these games have been absolutely brilliant.
More runs in this three-match one-day series than any other three-match one-day series played before.
Stunning.
Yeah.
So, Simon's off to the north of India. Mm-hmm. I'm heading back home. Will you please let us have a review on iTunes for what you think of this? And also, you can tweet us at the analyst or cricket_MANN.
Yeah, that's it.
Good. Well, good luck. Safe travels. Next week, we'll be looking back at the T20s next Tuesday. So tune into that. And in the meantime, thanks for listening.
Yeah, goodbye.
Podcast Network. Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.